This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The demolition of part of the White House goes on.
This morning, sources tell ABC News the entire east wing of the White House is being torn down as soon as this weekend to make way for President Trump's massive new ballroom, which he now says will cost $300 million. A cost he now claims will be split between private donors and himself.
ABC's Mary Bruce at the White House. The U.S. military launching another strike against what the White House says is a drug-carrying vessel. Two people were killed in the Eastern Pacific. President Trump justifying the strikes by asserting that the U.S. is engaged in an armed conflict with drug dealers and criminal organizers. Vice President J.D. Vance in Israel criticizing that country's parliament vote today authorizing the annexation of the West Bank. And in New York, there was fear that Broadway would be shut down starting today, but the Musicians Union just announced it's reached a tentative deal to avoid a walkout. This is ABC News.
For WRCE 107.7 News, I'm Shali Pittman. Governor Tony Evers has signed two bills aimed at giving EMS departments additional tools to address recruitment and retention. One bill aims to reduce financial barriers to entry by creating a tuition reimbursement program. It also creates a live 911 pilot program, which helps dispatchers send a link via text message to a caller to connect video in an emergency. The other bill increases the amount that EMS departments can bill the state's Medicaid program for calls where responders show up but don't end up transporting a patient to the hospital. Kickapoo District Administrator Kim Johnson is on the job this fall after being severely injured in a traffic crash on the way to school earlier this year. She was our guest on WRCO's morning show earlier this week.
So my accident occurred in the morning of February 10th, and I spent a month in the hospital, and then they sent me home, and at that point, I still couldn't do anything. I needed a lot of help to get out of bed or to get anywhere I needed. I was stuck between a chair and a wheelchair.
Johnson says it's been a long road to recovery, and she's grateful to all who came forward with their support.
Through cards and gifts and emails and Facebook messages, the number of schools that did 50-50s, my Ridge and Valley, the CESA, businesses in the area, all the families of community, my family, my friends. The list is long, and all of those actions really created in me a very positive reaction, which made my journey, that recovery, so positive, I think.
For WRCE News, I'm Shali Pittman.
The Bucks lose Porter.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA. The Bucks won their opener last night, 133-120, against the Wizards at Fiserv Forum, but they lost guard Kevin Porter Jr., who went down at the end of the first quarter with a sprained left ankle after stepping on teammate Bobby Portis's foot. Doc Rivers asked if he saw what happened.
No, it didn't look good. I'll just say that, you know. So he's going to do an MRI tomorrow. We just got to hope for the best. But looking at it, it was a pretty bad sprain.
The NFL has named Micah Parsons NFC Defensive Player of the Week. Parsons will be after Steelers quarterback Aaron Rodgers next on Sunday Night Football. Rodgers asked if playing the Pack is a revenge game for him.
I don't have any animosity toward the organization. Obviously, I wish that, you know, things have been better in our last year there, but, you know, I have a great relationship with a lot of people still in that organization. This is not a revenge game for me. I'm just excited to see some of those guys and be on Sunday Night Football again.
That's Aaron Rodgers with Sports on Mike Clemens.
107.7 WRCE, News from the Center and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
It is going to be mostly sunny today with a high in the low 50s here this afternoon. Tonight, clear and frosty. We're going to drop into the 20s for an overnight low. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high right around 55. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 39.
Drivers, Austin Cindric here. As a NASCAR Cup Series driver of the number 2 Discount Tire Ford Mustang, there's a few rules of the road I like to tell my family and friends. Tire pressure is critical to safety because underinflated tires are more likely to fail. Plus, properly inflated tires will give you better gas mileage. Make sure to check your tire pressure at least once a month or stop by a local tire retailer for an air check.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
Join me, Tom Hartman, each and every weekday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for the Tom Hartman Program right here on Civic Media. I talk about the issues that all Wisconsinites can get behind, from unrigging our economy so it works for all of us, not just the billionaire class, to improving our representative government, to delivering on the promise of we the people. Tune in middays right here on your local Civic Media station from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for the Tom Hartman Program. Tag, you're it.
Maggie Dawn.
At 5 o'clock, I'm joined by UW-Madison Professor of Military History, John Hall. We dig into what is going on in the current moment and its historical echoes of our past.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It is 7:06. Nice to have you back here up north on a Thursday morning, October 23rd, 2025. Parker Olson producing things down in Madison Studio A2. Not just producing. Turns out he's an aspiring news journalist and is going to tell us all about that story you might have just missed in the newscast coming up in just a little bit. And also ahead this hour, we're going to be talking to a guest, Megan Lowe, about how some of the recent political moves that are impacting healthcare access and affordability are hurting mothers and their medical decisions when it comes to some of their children who might have developmental or other disabilities. So listen for that coming up at 7:35. And then in our next hour, we'll talk to Joe Zepecki, as well as Chad Holmes from our Civic Media station in Wausau. And Sean O'Malley will be along to talk about your money and the markets. We'll talk a little state investment in cryptocurrency. We'll talk a little, why is Trump sending enough money to Argentina that could pay to keep our health insurance premiums from going up, kind of stuff. That's all ahead in our 8 o'clock hour. So a lot of ground to cover here. But I also wanted to take note of something that came up in our 8 o'clock hour yesterday with our friend Earl Ingram. And as we were talking about his podcast that you can find here at civicmedia.us, I made mention of a New York Times article that was especially critical of the prospect of former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes running for governor, as has been rumored that Mandela Barnes is thinking about getting into the race. He would be propelled immediately to at or near the front of the pack, having A, been Lieutenant Governor, and B, run a very close campaign against Senator Ron Johnson back in 2022, where he lost by the smallest margin ever in Wisconsin U.S. Senate election history. And of course, I've had a lot to say about whether it was so much that Mandela Barnes lost the race or that Ron Johnson's billionaire buddies were able to scare enough people about Mandela Barnes to help Ron Johnson win. But whatever you believe is the case, there are clearly people that look at the former lieutenant governor and say, well, he lost in 2022. And so if he couldn't win that statewide race against somebody as unpopular as Ron Johnson, they don't want to take a chance on him next time around. And there wasn't much for direct quotes in there. There was one direct quote from former lieutenant governor Barbara Lawton, who said something along the lines of that, you know, he proved that he could, he wasn't running hard enough and couldn't win the campaign on a statewide basis. And so there is clear that there is some unease there. But Earl Ingram yesterday was very critical of the report, said that the New York Times reporter had meant to call him Earl, but did not, for, you know, his own comment and take on the race, and really stuck with just the critics of Mandela Barnes. And that would be enough of a story if it stopped right there. But then yesterday, from a Black-owned newspaper in the city of Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Courier, comes the editorial that reads, "We can't afford to lose in 2026, and we can't risk another Mandela Barnes loss." And again, it was highly critical, especially in this sense, that even though Mandela Barnes came close and the primary field had cleared for him to take on Ron Johnson, he lost by some 26,000 votes. But not just that, he ran about 50,000 votes behind Governor Tony Evers, who you'll recall was on the ballot for re-election that year. And that even in Milwaukee County, Mandela Barnes ran behind Tony Evers. In other words, reads the editorial, he couldn't finish the deal. And the editorial says, let's be clear, this is not personal. Mandela's story is one of promise. He's bright. He's passionate. But this moment is not about promise. It's about performance. In politics, you earn your next opportunity by delivering on the last one. And in 2022, Mandela didn't. That Senate seat was ours to win. He had national support. He had resources. He had the attention. And still, he came up short. And what's more, it says, instead of spending the past 2 years organizing here at home, building bridges, proving he learned from that loss, what we've seen is a campaign in waiting with no clear rationale other than a desire to try again, and that's not enough. Now, I would take issue with that on a couple of fronts here, that Mandela Barnes has hardly been spending his time twiddling his thumbs and waiting for the next race. He has worked with a group, Forward Together Wisconsin, that has tried to match new federal green energy resources with homeowners and with school districts and more. He's formed a political action committee designed to help other candidates to, you know, make a run for office. He's appeared on this show a couple of times. I am not in any way telling you that Mandela Barnes ran a perfect campaign for U.S. Senate. He didn't. He fell short. But he also went up against the buzzsaw of literal billionaires who literally made millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, because Ron Johnson gave them a sweetheart tax deal in the 2017 tax bill. And they were willing to take those hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes they no longer had to pay, meaning you and I had to make up the difference in the taxes that these billionaires weren't paying. And instead, they put that money into a Ron Johnson campaign. So I'm not here to tell you that anybody would have necessarily beat Ron Johnson, even though the man is consistently underwater. He's not popular in the state. But every year at election time, he or his cronies find just enough negative material, just enough negative ads for Ron Johnson to squeak out narrow victories. And while he, I would guess, not run for a fourth term in 2028, if he were to run, that would probably be the formula again. But the question here is about whether Mandela Barnes is the right choice to run for governor. And you know, as noted in some of the reaction to this editorial, you know, there are people in the Milwaukee area that still are unhappy that Mandela Barnes, when he was in the state assembly, ran a primary challenge against fellow Democratic state senator Lena Taylor. And that just gets us into the whole inside baseball of Milwaukee politics overall. And by the way, that's not just a Milwaukee thing. There's inside politics about, you know, Chippewa Valley politics that we could talk about. And we've talked before about the 8th district, the 8th congressional district in Northeast Wisconsin, and especially on the Republican side. There's a lot of inside baseball that most voters, frankly, don't want to hear about, but it's real. And it's what gets in the way of, you know, races that are clear and not filled with primaries that can get messy. And that's definitely the case in Milwaukee. I've watched that for decades, and I know how, you know, there in when you get into regional politics like Milwaukee, the Chippewa Valley, Northeast Wisconsin, elsewhere, the cliques are worthy of high school. You know, who likes who doesn't like who, and it gets rather annoying sometimes if you're just an observer. If you're inside of one of those cliques, you actually have real genuine feelings, not of love, of your fellow Republican or your fellow Democrat. I will be the first one to say publicly that I have said privately many a time, there were some Republicans in the legislature that I got along with better than a couple of Democrats in the state capitol. People that I would, you know, be very happy to have seen replaced, and that I could have worked more with a couple of moderate Republicans. And there are moderate Republicans who feel the same way about some of their Republican brethren. So having set the stage that not everybody in politics gets along, even if they're of the same political party, you have to open up the blinders and ask yourself, okay, can this candidate win? That's what Democrats are facing in the 3rd Congressional District right now. They're looking at Becca Cook. This is now her third time running in the 3rd Congressional District. The last time around, she ran as the Democratic nominee. She fell short against Derek Van Orden. And you have very clear sets of Democrats there, some who believe she is almost there, a little bit more support, and we can finally, you know, have representation other than Derek Van Orden in the 3rd Congressional District. And others who say, nope, she's peaked. That's as close as she's going to get. It is time to try somebody new. That's why you have the primaries. And if Mandela Barnes wants to get into a primary for governor, he's going to get into the primary. And he's going to have to answer these questions about why he trailed Governor Evers in Milwaukee County voting in 2022. Why it is that some Democrats in the Milwaukee area, in the 4th Congressional District, just don't warm up to him. He'll have to address that if he wants to get in. And if he answers those questions to the satisfaction of others, same as Becca Cook in the 3rd Congressional District or in some of the legislative districts where there are now multiple Democrats running for office, well, then that builds you a stronger nominee. Hopefully, not always. There are times when primaries are absolutely destructive. The quintessential example for me is the 2012 primary among Republicans for U.S. Senate. That's how Tammy Baldwin got elected. Tammy Baldwin, people did not give her, easy odds of winning. But Tommy Thompson, the former governor, emerged from a bruising three-way Republican primary. The Republicans at the end of that primary cycle hated each other. And there was not a lot of instant general election support for Tommy Thompson. Tammy Baldwin masterfully took advantage of that and made sure people understood how much more moderate, easygoing, sensible, sane she was compared to a dysfunctional field on the other side of the aisle, won that election, and has proven herself again and now again running for a third term. So primaries are just a way of life in this system. And Mandela Barnes will have to expect that one way or the other if he decides to run for governor. And he hasn't decided that yet, at least not publicly that we know about. But I thought it was important that we talk about the fact that unlike when he ran for Senate, the decks are not going to clear. The sea is not going to part and other primary challengers say, you know, he is going to be the most popular one. Let's coalesce behind him. It's not going to happen this time. He or Sarah Rodriguez or David Crawley or Kelda Royce or Francesca Hong or Missy Hughes, they're going to have to earn it. But if they earn it in a primary that stays above board, that does not devolve into what the Republicans did in 2012, then they have that much better odds of that nominee being able to hold on to the governor's office in Wisconsin. Because in a cycle where Donald Trump is as unpopular as any president has ever been, if Democrats cannot ride that wave to holding the governor's office, taking over the assembly and the Senate, and maybe even sweeping some Republican incumbents like Derek Van Orden out of office, well, then that will have been a terrible opportunity lost primarily because of inside politics. And that's not what anybody wants to see. In sports, the NBA season is underway, and the Milwaukee Bucks won their opener at home against the Washington Wizards, 133-120. Giannis Antetokounmpo put up 37 points, 14 rebounds, and 5 assists. There was a very hearty welcome back for former teammate Chris Middleton, who's now with Washington. Big standing ovation during pregame introductions. Another big ovation when they played a video tribute to him during the first timeout of the game. So it was the best of all things. You got to welcome back an old friend and at the same time beat him and his old team. The kind of thing we should have done a better job of with Willy Adames. But that's another story. Coming up in 15 minutes, we're going to talk to our guest Megan Lowe about how Republican political moves have been hurting families who are about to see healthcare costs spike. And that's especially harmful for families that have a member with developmental or other disabilities. That's all coming up live from the heart of America's up north here on Lake Wissota. I'm Pat Whitelow from Up North News. This is the Radio Network.
News from the Center, WRCE.
Did the average S&P 500 CEOs earn in less than 2 days what their typical worker earned in all of 2023? Yes. In 2023, the average S&P 500 CEO earned about $17 million, or about $46,849 per day, compared to under $64,000 per year for the average worker. Median figures were similar. CEOs made $16.3 million, while median workers earned about $81,000, equivalent to less than 2 days of CEO pay. High CEO compensation remains a stark contrast to the modest worker earnings across major U.S. companies. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
If you've ever found yourself driving down a quiet back road and thought, this feels special, you might be on one of our estate's rustic roads.
The program was created by the legislature back in 1973. It's really a unique local-state partnership.
Officials wanted people by car, bike, motorcycle, or even on foot to enjoy the natural beauty. The first rustic road designated in Taylor County 50 years ago this month.
There's 124 roads that have been designated rustic roads in Wisconsin in 62 different counties, and it spans over 784 miles.
Each rustic road is unique, rolling past farmland through forests or covering rugged terrain. And the speed limit tops out at 45 miles an hour, sometimes even slower. It's not about getting anywhere fast. This slice of Wisconsin reveals sometimes the best part of the journey is the road itself. I'm Terry Baugh.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Visit cancer.org today.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WRCE. I'm Bo Hendricks, and here's what's going on in Richland Center this morning.
On our morning show from WRCO Radio, we're talking about physical therapy, National PT Month, in fact. And from the Richland Hospital today, we have Kara Watson and Amy Hergert, who are joining us to talk about physical therapy and what it's all about. So why is there a National PT Month, Kara?
I think it's just a great way to highlight the services that therapy provides. It's not the first position that you think of when you think of healthcare, but it's definitely an integral one.
Amy, maybe you can tell us about what are the different types of physical therapies?
There's quite a bit of services. That's what I really enjoy with when I chose the career that I'm in. I mean, you can work with kids and you can go all the way down to, you know, orthotics and different things like that, all the way up to centurions and working on balance and falls. So I started here at the Richland Hospital doing school physical therapy and then moved into doing more of an outpatient ortho. And in the rural area, what's really nice is I might work with someone who has dizziness or concussions, and then I might work with someone who had a total knee. So there's just quite a few different options and niches. I don't do like lymphedema, another therapist does, but you get specialized training. Just like with us in the vestibular, we did a Herdman's course, which makes us more qualified than someone who just gets out of school doing vestibular and different things like that. So there's quite a bit little niches. You can become orthopedic certified, all those different things like that.
On a typical day, you could treat somebody who was in their teens and then somebody who was in their upper whatever, right?
Yep, that's true. Yep.
So never a dull moment then, right?
It really isn't.
She talked a little bit about the qualifications here. Herdman's. Could you talk a little bit about that, Kara?
So Susan Herdman is, She is a practitioner that kind of wrote the book for vestibular rehabilitation. She's currently a professor at Emory University and has developed this advanced training where clinicians from across the country can come to a week-long intensive course, and they are learning from the latest, the brightest minds at Duke and Emory universities. And we're just getting the people that are teaching this course are literally writing the research articles. They're literally writing the clinical practice guidelines that clinicians across the world are using to treat people with vestibular disorders. And we got to learn from them. So it was a really unique opportunity, and it's kind of a big deal. And we just, I consider myself very fortunate that I work at a hospital that invests in its staff and provides opportunities for us to go to advanced training courses. And I think it really speaks to our mission to provide the best care for our patients, because it's our patients above all else.
Do you feel you're kind of on the cusp of things? You know, you're kind of...
Well, we try.
Yeah.
We
but
try.
I mean, but going to this, I mean, you're kind of taking a step forward with this, aren't you?
Yes. And so it's been a couple of years since we've been, but we are in contact. We are always kind of trying to stay up to date with what the latest research provides. And going to that course helps us navigate through what to pay attention to and what isn't the best information.
I think you touched on a little bit, Amy, but... what are some of the common injuries or conditions that you see and treat at the Richland Hospital?
Again, going back with my pediatric kid background, I feel like you can work with anyone who has developmental delays, genetic issues, hypotonia, all the way up to, again, going back to the older generation with someone who's just struggling with their everyday needs, and even like a traumatic brain injury, someone having a concussion. So it really is just, we have an open, schedule, and whatever eval we approve, you know, like I said, I don't do lymphedema. So really it could be any kind of diagnosis. What we were kind of trying to hint at is that, you know, if you feel like you're not able to do things that you used to be able to do, if you have pain and you're not able to control it, that's our whole goal, is to make everyone's life a little bit better. So
I learned something today. I never would think about treating a concussion with physical therapy. What do you do for a concussion typically?
Yeah, so with a concussion, it has to do with the movement in the brain. And so if you take an MRI, they actually don't show any specific injury. It's the lowest form of a traumatic brain injury. And so what happens is the connection between the right and the left brain kind of gets a little muddy, and most people will complain of headaches, dizziness, light issues, different things like that. And so what we do is teach you how to reorganize that in your brain a little bit more. So there's other avenues. So if you had a severe concussion, you might even need speech or OT for cognitive things. But at the most part, typically, if it's a younger adult, they're working with their athletic trainer and with us. And the number one goal is to make sure everyone's safe to play when you think about a younger adult and different things like that. So
It has to be a rewarding job, Kara, when you look at it, because you got somebody that maybe has been putting up with pain for several years. And if you can, you know, maybe get rid of it or at least get it down to where it's a manageable level, that's got to be satisfying for you, isn't it?
It is. And I think one of the best parts of my job is the people that I've met and the patients that I've developed relationships with. And, you know, if we can get rid of the pain, great. But most of the time, we're just trying to help you be able to function a little bit better. And it's been really rewarding getting to know people over the years. I have some patients that I've seen multiple times on and off for the past 5, 10 years. So it's been really nice to get to know them and figure out how to help them on their healthcare journey. It is very rewarding.
If you give somebody some exercises to do at home, you can probably tell how diligent they have been. You know, I guess I'm kind of speaking about myself, you know? I mean,
you're confessing.
I'm confessing a little bit. But you can probably tell, you know, who's been really taking it to heart and who's not, right?
Yeah. And I mean, yes, doing your home exercises is very important, because there's not like a magic wand that we can wave over people to make things better. It takes active involvement and participation, but, you know, life gets busy sometimes, and there's practices and games and family dinners, and like maybe you weren't the best at your exercises that week, and that's okay. That's okay. Or maybe we rehabbed you to a point where you were feeling really good and life got busy and then things are not great again. I like to think of therapists is almost like mechanics that provide tune-ups. So we're here whenever you need us to help us feel, to help you feel better.
You've been listening to WRCE's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Take your favorite WRCE shows with you on the go by downloading the Civic Media app in the Apple or Google stores. For WRCE and Civic Media, I'm Bo Henricks.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
From Richland Center City Hall to Madison, stay informed with Civic Media's Radio Network's news team. Learn more at WRCE.fm.
Oh, you bet. Wisconsin beef producers, whether they're native beef or dairy beef, they're worried about Argentina beef entering their marketplace. I'm Pam Yonke, starting you off before the opening bell on a Thursday morning. Quick look at what's happening in agribusiness news, and we'll hear what one Wisconsin beef producer worries about most. That's next.
What is the Dairyland seed difference? The answer is found in our difference makers. Our seeds are developed and delivered for unrivaled performance in and only in the upper Midwest. Our local dealers, expert agronomists, and everyone throughout our organization who live to make life better on farms and in the community. It's our people, products, and pedigree that combine to make a true difference that you can see on the bottom line and feel in your heart. Learn more about our difference makers at DairylandSeedDifference.com.
Brady Zooks, a beef producer just outside of Ladysmith. He's also a member of the Wisconsin Cattlemen's Association. He said what bothers him is consumers are still buying beef, even at an escalated price. That's why the idea of bringing Argentinian beef into the U.S. marketplace bothers him.
We're near the high of our 10-year cycle right now based on limited cattle inventory. There's just less calves around to feed. So, it's a cycle, right? Things go up, things go down, and these are the times where we as producers can be profitable, make money, and then save that up for the good or the times that come that aren't as rich. What really concerns me, you know, is the outside, manipulation, you could say, of the cattle market, right? Cattle market's based on free trade principles, supply and demand, and any kind of outside intervention really wreaks havoc in our markets.
Brady Zook, a member of the Wisconsin Cattlemen's Association, a beef producer himself by Ladysmith, irritated at the idea of Argentinian beef being introduced to the U.S. marketplace. One item to make note of, we're finding out that today the U.S. Department of Agriculture may reopen Farm Service Agency offices to release about $3 billion in aid directly to farmers. This happening despite the government shutdown continuing. It's a developing story we'll keep an eye on. Keeping an eye on markets, those numbers are next.
No one should have to navigate herd health alone. Luckily, you don't have to. A successful operation requires teamwork. Visit bio-vet.com and let us help identify key challenges and offer expert solutions unique to your situation. We evaluate your full herd health plan and make economical recommendations to your operation. Learn more about our team and products for herd health at bio-vet.com.
Innovation.
This morning, December corn is up a penny at 424. November beans are up 2 at 1037. July wheat's unchanged. Yesterday, the barrel cheese dropped 2 to 175.5. 40-pound block cheese was down 2.5 at 174. And AA butter dropped 3.5 on Wednesday to 154.5 per pound. There's your market snapshot on a Thursday. I'm Pam Yonke.
Know what's happening in your community, across Wisconsin, and around the nation. Over the air and on the web, all right here on WRCE Richland Center.
It is going to be mostly sunny today with a high in the low 50s here this afternoon. Tonight, clear and frosty. We're going to drop into the 20s for an overnight low. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high right around 55. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 38.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Paul Jaconi Berry and Sean Hannish back with another great Wisconsin sports film. No Packers, no life.
Sean came across No Packers, No Life at the Wisconsin Film Festival and said, you got to see it. We got to see if we can do something. This movie is just such a great opportunity to really see the impact of Wisconsin culture halfway around the world in Japan. It is just so magical and joyful. Yeah. So I encourage everybody to come take a look.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Nobody had to tell your grandparents not to drive while using their typewriters. Why should it be any different for us kids and our cell phones? Distracted driving was the cause of more than 3,000 deaths in 2022. Come on, we're smarter than this. Let's put down the phones and focus on the roads. Drive safe, everybody.
Don't drive distracted.
A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Jim Santel, host of Amicus, a law review, joining us. Going to talk to the Milwaukee Public Museum about special things for Halloween and all things sports with Paul Noonan.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
This next topic is a little more on the mature side when it comes to politics, policy, and the real world impact on people, and includes discussions about sexual assault, but also about the medical decisions that have to be made by families. It gets beyond the what I would say is just outright game playing that's happening in places like the nation's capital right now, where healthcare to some people just seems to be a case of numbers on a spreadsheet, and that these are very generic concerns. But when it comes to people, families with people who have developmental and other disabilities, this is no game. And we're not just talking about the medications that people need on a daily basis. There is, for an example, a statistic that says somewhere around 80% of women who have developmental disabilities or intellectual disabilities, around 80% have been sexually assaulted at some point in life. And so access to things like contraception and the full range of reproductive health care services is vitally important, and yet is under threat in so many ways through Medicaid cuts, through cuts to premium tax credits that make health insurance affordable through the Affordable Care Act, and much more. It's these kinds of real issues that Megan Lowe has to deal with her daughter, Nora. And she joins us now to talk to us about that from the Merrimack area. Megan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. We're doing great here.
Good. And you have Nora there with you as well. Can you tell us just a little bit about Nora's story?
Sure. Nora is 17 years old. She has what is called Rett syndrome, R-E-T-T. It's a neurological disorder. It affects everything she does, but she is a 17-year-old inside, so she understands us. It's just her expressive language and her body control that really hinder her daily life.
Yeah, it's a case of, like you said, muscle control, speaking, walking. Yep. Seizures are a feature as well.
Yes.
And this is something that does not currently have a cure, as I understand.
Correct. No, okay. There are just ways to mitigate symptoms.
Mm-hmm. So that takes us to the need for all sorts of affordable health insurance resources. And mm-hmm. I am going to assume that you are not independently wealthy, and mm-hmm. that health insurance and medications and things for Nora are probably a constant struggle.
Mm-hmm. We do have private insurance, but a lot of our private insurance they don't cover a lot of her daily needs. Those are picked up by Medicaid. Like her formulas, she eats through a G-tube. All of her syringes, diapers, wipes are even some of the durable medical equipment our private insurance does not cover. So I'm really worried to think of families that do rely on ACA. How are they going to get these items that they need for their child to survive on a daily basis?
Yeah, because again, so part of it is through Medicaid, and part of it as well would be through these enhanced premium tax credits. These are things that were added through the Biden administration and Congress 4 years back mm-hmm. to help make these plans under the Affordable Care Act more affordable. So between the expiration of these enhanced premium tax credits for the Affordable Care Act and the approximately $1 trillion in cuts coming to Medicaid, I can only ask you to speak for yourself, but how concerned are you when you hear about healthcare cuts in these two different areas?
I'm incredibly concerned, because how are we supposed to prop up and support our state's most vulnerable people, especially when they are at risk of such egregious actions just by having a disability and being a woman. The fact that under the Affordable Care Act, birth control is free with insurance. There's no copay. If they let these premium tax credits expire, women will lose coverage. They're going to lose protection. I don't understand why they're trying to get rid of tools in our toolbox. As caregivers, these are off ramps that we need to have access to, and they're taking them away.
And doing so, again, to a population that was vulnerable to begin with, but as I noted at the top of the segment here, there is a depressingly large number of, you know, sexual assaults of one type or another that take place for women with developmental and intellectual disabilities. And so you had to have this very real conversation about making sure that Nora had contraception.
Yep. We spoke with her medical team, and they approached it. They approached it as I was doing it as a caregiver to limit the number of periods, or, you know, to make her care easier. And I said, no, the actual reason is because she has an over 80% chance of being sexually assaulted in her lifetime. It's 50% of having it happen more than once. That is the reason why we're putting her on contraception. And then, of course, sure, a lot of women go on contraception for other reasons. And those are just some benefits that we will see when she's on it. So we cannot lose this for this vulnerable population. This is just so important that we cannot lose this. We cannot lose the tax credits.
No. And for folks who might be saying, well, I mean, if she needs virtually 24-hour care, how is it that she's unsupervised? I can tell you, not just as a, you know, from a family standpoint, I can tell you from a journalist standpoint, again, a depressing number of news stories that have been done over the years of people who were, you know, violated by people who were in their care for a short time, or, you know, an acquaintance or anything like that. So this need for contraceptive services is extremely real, along with all of the other, you know, medications. And then you've got the nature of Medicaid itself, which in Wisconsin covers around 1 out of 3 births to begin with. So Medicaid truly is a lifeline to all sorts of families around Wisconsin.
Without affordable coverage, women are going to lose their right to no-cost contraception. Premiums are going to rise. Women are going to pay the price. Women with disability, I mean, what are we going to do? We can't and at the federal level, as far as the special education, I just feel like this vulnerable group of people, they are just being forgotten about.
And I have to say one, again, startling statistic that I was aware of being married to an OBGYN, and of course knowing several of them as well, is that there are at times 1 in 5 uninsured women who say they've had to stop using a birth control method because they couldn't afford it. And again, that shouldn't be a thing, Megan.
No, it shouldn't be a thing. That is reproductive health care.
Megan Lowe is our guest. She's a mom and caregiver to Nora. We're talking about how cuts to health care, whether it's Affordable Care Act insurance premiums or Medicaid cuts, are having a real impact on families, and a real concern for families that maybe haven't felt the impact yet, but it sure seems like they're going to if this government shutdown continues on. Have you done outreach to any elected officials about this? Clearly, it's good that you're speaking out about this, but I wonder if you've had interaction with elected officials in the past and whether they share your level of concern.
Oh, definitely. Diane Hasselbein and Lisa Subek, we have been working with them for the Access to Contraception Act. The Republicans... they're not interested. This act would ensure that people have access to contraception and the reproductive care that they need. But it's not going anywhere because we know the political environment in the Capitol. So, I mean, people are talking about it. There is legislation. it's just hard to get things going down at the Capitol.
It really is. And we're talking about the state capitol here. You've had discussions, mm-hmm. I know, with Republican lawmakers. And, I mean, do you feel like you've come away that they either don't empathize or maybe don't even believe you when you talk about your concerns?
I feel like when it's a face-to-face conversation, they definitely empathize with us. And they seem to support us. That's why I don't understand the disconnect between the actual voting for legislation versus just the lip service.
Well, there's another topic that we hear about with that, and that deals with, cannabis and, legalization of, mm-hmm. THC and things like that. That's something that you're concerned about as well from the standpoint of, pain management and things like that.
Definitely. Nora and I are part of the Wisconsin Wellness Coalition. We're working with, we actually just worked with Senator Teston and Senator Filskowski. Their medical bill that they are introducing is really great. And I really hope that it gets traction because that also really helps women with disabilities, women and men with disabilities throughout the state. Again, it's our most vulnerable people in the state that seem to be overlooked. This is a safety issue. These people exist. They are loved. They are in our families. They deserve a place at the table.
And it's also, frankly, a convenience issue. Wisconsin is quickly becoming an island surrounded by states that have provided mm-hmm. some form of legalization, at least for, medical use of cannabis products. Mm-hmm. And so there's a whole lot of Wisconsinites that face a very long drive for an assortment of services and products right now.
Well, I'm a breast cancer survivor. I was diagnosed in 2023, and I have utilized our neighboring cannabis for my treatment and to get better. And it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I testified to that. I feel like there are a lot of issues in the state capitol that are, they have the support, the Contraception Access Act, cannabis. The Republican legislator is just not letting those bills come forward. And there is support. And it's very sad to see.
It is, because again, at both levels, at the state legislative level and at the federal congressional level, there are things that can be done. At the federal level, maybe not slash, $1 trillion from Medicaid. And at the state mm-hmm. level, maybe accept the Medicaid expansion and cover more people so that they, that they have affordable care. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, Megan, then as people hear about this shutdown and they hear that it deals with healthcare issues like the enhanced premium credits for the Affordable Care Act, what is the ultimate takeaway? What is it that you hope people think about moving forward whenever they start hearing the news reports about the shutdown dragging on?
Well, when premiums rise, women are going to pay the price. Congress needs to keep the premium tax credits in place to protect contraception and reproductive care. There is no way around it. I'm not sure what we're going to do for these people if they don't.
Megan Lowe joins us from the Merrimack area with her daughter, Nora, to talk to us more about how this is all real. This isn't just some game that they play in Washington. It's mm-hmm. not just some stalling that they do in Madison. There are real people and lives affected by this. And Megan, I appreciate so much that you were able to take time with us today and help share Nora's story and your story with us all. Thank you again. I hope you have a good day.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Megan, very much. Still ahead, coming up in the next hour, we will be talking to Sean O'Malley about your money and the markets. We'll be talking to Chad Holmes from 98.9 WXCO in Wausau. And, of course, catching up on the week's political news with Joe Zepecki. I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Wesley Financial Group is not a law firm.
Hi, I'm Chuck McDowell, the timeshare cancellation guy. In 2011, I founded Wesley Financial Group with one goal in mind, to help honest folks out of their timeshares permanently. Today, I run Wesley with my two sons, a real family business, treating every client and every employee like we'd want our own family treated. That philosophy has helped us grow into the largest, most trusted timeshare cancellation company in the United States. Fortune magazine even recognized us as one of the best places to work. Why? Because we genuinely care. In fact, some of our former clients were so moved by their experience working with us, they joined our team so they could help others to timeshare freedom. If you're stuck in a timeshare, give us a call. Let our family help your family.
Call Wesley now for your free timeshare exit kit. 800-549-8866. 800-549-8866. 800-549-8866.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation just announced the official start date for one of its biggest ever construction projects, the I-94 East-West Project, which will reconstruct and widen a 3.5-mile stretch of interstate highway in the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. This is a massive project with an estimated cost of more than $1.7 billion. And with this official start date announced, also came estimates for how long this will take. Construction is expected to last until 2030. At the Recombobulation Area, this project is something we've covered extensively, including with an award-winning four-part series called Expanding the Divide. It might be worth revisiting that series and considering how unnecessary and expensive an extra lane is, and how in southeastern Wisconsin, we're going to be dealing with construction and delays for the next 8 years in order to shave a few minutes off suburban commute times while the city streets and city problems go ignored once again.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
From Eau Claire to Green Bay.
Oh, my goodness, a powerful run to the house.
And Milwaukee to Madison.
Under duress, and it's a safety.
The tradition of Badger football lives here.
Touchdown, Wisconsin.
Join us Saturday. Wisconsin heads west to take on the Oregon Ducks. Our coverage begins at 4.
Now we'll get rolling.
On your home for Wisconsin football.
We'll be pressured and sacked.
The Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Tom Hartman here. Democracy is not a spectator sport, so join me each and every weekday right here on Civic Media for the Tom Hartman program from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Covering the news of the day and sharing ways for you to get off the sidelines and get active in your community, because change starts with you. Get involved and tune in to the Tom Hartman program Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on your local Civic Media radio station.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WRCE. Here's what's going on in Richland Center this morning.
For Joanne Krulutz, I'm Phil Nee with the news. Joint Committee on Finance co-chairs Senator Howard Markline and Representative Mark Bourne issued a statement concerning the Department of Health Services' failure to maintain transparency and accountability in the opioid settlement plan. The press release says that according to 2021 Wisconsin Act 57, which was signed by Governor Evers, DHS must submit its opioid settlement plan to the Joint Committee on Finance for the next fiscal year by April 1st each year. More than 6 months late, DHS has not submitted a plan to JFC. According to the nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau, Wisconsin is scheduled to receive about $15 million in opioid settlement funds this year. A former Richland Center business owner has died. Carl Huth, 83, of Richland Center, died Saturday at St. Mary's Hospital in Madison. Carl was born in Dayton Township. He attended grade school at the Huth School and graduated from Richland Center High School in 1960. He worked at Kramer Brothers before and after his call to active duty in the United States Army. In 1970, he married Susan Ferguson, and in 1974, Carl and Susan joined the family meat processing business in Richland Center. as co-owners with Carl and Doris Schellevold. In 1996, Carl and Susan obtained sole ownership of the Richland Locker and passed the family business to their son in 2010. He enjoyed helping the family business after retirement with phone calls and deliveries. Carl was a member of Wisconsin Association of Meat Processing for over 40 years, served as director for 30 years, and served as term as a president as well. A celebration of life will be held at the Phoenix Center Friday, October 31st from 2 until 5. Kickapoo District Administrator Kim Johnson is on the job this fall after being severely injured in a traffic crash on the way to school earlier this year. She was my guest on WRCO's morning show yesterday.
So my accident occurred in the morning of February 10th, and I spent a month in the hospital, and then they sent me home. And at that point, I still couldn't do anything. I needed a lot of help to get out of bed or to get anywhere I needed. I was stuck between a chair and a wheelchair. And have spent countless hours in both OT and PT to get to the point where I am able to walk on my own. I struggle a little bit, but a lot of everything that I lost, you know, when I think back to February 10th, it pretty much stripped me of everything. And I'm just really lucky to be here, be alive. And so there are a lot of things to be grateful for. There was a lot of pain in that journey, a lot of misery and a lot of fear. But I chose to feed all of the positives. You know, I have always known that whatever you feed grows. So it was just finding something positive in each day, some area that I could focus and make each day better. So I think back to even when that started, one of my positives was to be able to stand on my good leg for 2 minutes. Yeah. So that was something I celebrated and was excited about.
Kim Johnson says it has been a long recovery road back, and she is grateful for all that came forward and all of the support.
Honestly, want to just take the time now, since there might be many listeners who were there for my journey, who supported me in one way or another, through cards and gifts and emails and Facebook messages, the number of schools that did 50-50s, my Ridge and Valley, the CESA, businesses in the area, all the families of community, my family, my friends. The list is long, and all of those actions really created in me a very positive reaction, which made my journey, that recovery, so positive, I think. So I credit all of that support and all of that love and support to all of those kind, wonderful people. So if I have that moment right now, I just want to say thank you. All of that meant the world to me, and I really credit the doctors telling me that my recovery is going really well and going faster than what they had initially anticipated. But I have a wealth of support and prayer warriors, the number of churches that were praying for me. So yeah, it's been a journey where I often will think, how or why did I survive that? And so I feel like there is purpose. I feel like God was not done with me yet. So I'm really trying to pay forward all that kindness and have an understanding about what my life has meaning for and how I'm supposed to contribute.
Kickapoo District Administrator Kim Johnson, who is back on the job full-time at Kickapoo Schools this fall. She was on WRCO's morning show. The Richland Center Fire Department was paged to 645 North Central Avenue in Richland Center for a house fire on Monday night around 5:40. Six fire units and 34 firefighters responded. There was heavy smoke, water, and fire damage to the whole structure. The Richland Center Fire Department assisted at the scene by Richland County Sheriff's Department, Richland Center City Police Department, Richland EMS, and City Utilities. A GoFundMe page has been set up for the family. You can find the GoFundMe link on any local Richland buy and sell Facebook group page. A warning that Wisconsin food share funding will soon run out if the federal government shutdown continues. The shutdown is now in its third week, and Democratic Governor Tony Evers says the Trump administration recently notified Wisconsin that there will be insufficient funds to pay full November SNAP benefits. Vernon County will host its third annual Vernon County Awards Banquet Thursday, November 6th at Venue in the Valley in Coon Valley, celebrating the people, businesses, and organizations that make Vernon County thrive. This year's banquet will feature the theme, Legacy Builders, Honoring Tradition, Embracing the Future, recognizing the visionaries, innovators, and community partners shaping Vernon County's story across the generations. Doors will open at 5 with dinner and the program to follow. Tickets are priced at $25 per person, payable by cash or check at the door. All are welcome to attend and join in celebrating and achievements and collaborations that make Vernon County exceptional. Please RSVP by October 25th. And you can do that at forms.cloudmicrosoft. For more information, contact Larkin Breckel at 608-637-5334.
You've been listening to WRCE's local news on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Take your favorite WRCE shows with you on the go by downloading the Civic Media app in the Apple or Google Play stores.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Another confirmed military strike on a boat, the second in the Eastern Pacific. That makes 9 strikes in all on what the White House says are drug-running vessels. The White House says it's an armed conflict with dangerous drug cartels. However, says ABC's Rachel Scott in Washington,
Democrats insist that these military strikes are a violation of U.S. and international law, and even some Republicans are pressing the White House for more information on their legal justification behind these strikes and just how exactly they're carried out.
The entire east wing of the White House could be gone by this weekend. It's being demolished to make way for President Trump's new ballroom, which will be nearly twice the size of the entire White House residence. The European Union has announced a new set of sanctions against Russia, including on Russian oil companies over the war in Ukraine. President Volodymyr Zelensky praising the vote. The Miami Heat's Terry Rozier is now under arrest in connection with a federal sports betting investigation. This is ABC News.